Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
This is the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news. To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the road.
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
We're here at the Yahoo Sports headquarters. This is the set of NBA Draft Live, which will be coming to you tomorrow, 7 o'clock Eastern time, right here in Yahoo Sports on the mobile app. We're going to bring you information as soon as we have it. We're going to give you as much analysis as we can. We're going to go both rounds for the first time in 3 years. Our third year doing it, first time we're going to go both rounds, right? Isn't that right?
Two rounds. Our pleasure.
Hold up. Nobody was more excited about going two rounds than Pete Thamel.
I love the second round. Where all my college guys show up.
I should probably introduce everybody. Pete Thamel, senior college basketball writer at Yahoo Sports. Mike Hopkins, the head coach at Washington University. University of Washington, sorry. Is that like...
Washington University is in St. Louis.
That's all right.
All right, and the nerd talk is off and running there. That's great. That's great. And Wes Wilcox, the former GM of the Atlanta Hawks. We're coming to you on Facebook, so we're going to take your questions off of Facebook. So leave your questions in the comments section. We'll be scrolling through them and answering as much as we can. Before we get to the specifics, guys, wait for people to log on to Facebook and start sending those questions in. Wes, it's hard to predict a draft, right? I mean, like, it's always maddening sometimes. People like, really strong draft, really weak draft, because you never know how things turn out. But at the top of the draft in particular, where the most interest is, what do you make of it? What do you make of the first, 5 to 10 picks there in terms of strength of draft?
You know, it seems to be a pretty good draft at the very top with maybe some very good players. But there seems to be a great deal of uncertainty between, the early to mid lottery. And whenever that's the case, what that typically means is the NBA is not sold on the overall kind of consensus of that group. So I think it's a good draft. It's certainly a deep draft. Like, we're going to get late into the first round, into the second round with some very good players. That's probably the overall strength of the draft. But at the very top, that first 10 picks, they're probably good, but maybe not as transformative as some would hope.
Pete, what do you think of this, the class as a whole?
I think the sheer quantity of big guys is rare. Last year we had a huge run on point guards, right, Chris? It was a point guard heavy draft. This year it's really point guard bereft, practically. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see...
It's a big word. Are you a writer?
Which nice. We're trying... right. Syracuse education. Yeah. Somebody, right?
Can I Google that? Can I get 5 minutes?
Three Fs.
Yes, excellent.
But I do just think it's probably a once-a-decade draft in terms of the just quantity of depth. And I do think it's a good quality of depth, but as Wes said, I don't think it's, like, great. I don't think there are many sure things after the first... I don't even know if after you could say the second pick is a sure thing, because Michael Porter's probably the second best player in the draft, and he's certainly not a sure thing because of his back. I'm not sold on Luka Doncic, and then you can kind of go on and on. Jaren Jackson's so great. Why wasn't he productive at Michigan State? Mm-hmm. He had foul trouble, and he fits the prototype of what you want out of a five. So I just think there's everyone's a little bit flawed as you go down, which supports what Wes said, which is this isn't a high end draft overall up top.
Mike, two negative guys here. Do you have anything positive to say about the top of this draft?
Well, I think DeAndre Ayton is a can't-miss prospect. And again, I'll reiterate what Pete said about Michael Porter. I think there's some questions, but talent-wise, I mean, he's 6'11", he handles it, he can shoot. He's an exceptional shooter, but he's a top 1% athlete. I mean, this guy flies. So it's just going to be interesting. But I think the high end, and going back to Wes's point, I think in the second round, there's some players, again, we don't know who's getting drafted, but have gone over there that I think are just as good as some of the mid-range first-round draft picks. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's dive in a little bit to DeAndre Ayton, because if there's one thing we know at this point, it's, barring something shocking, he's going to be the number one overall pick in the draft. Phoenix seems to be locked in on him. He's telling everyone that will hear that he's the number one pick in the draft. Do you see him as a can't-miss type? I mean, how do you project out Aiden?
I mean, he's, you know, you talk about the modern-day five, but he's also, you know, I played against Alonzo Mourning and a lot of those guys. I mean, when you go in and you see him, we played against him this year, and it's JV and varsity. I mean, he's not only a guy the size, but his skill. He can shoot the ball. He can pass the ball. And he's just a thoroughbred. And, you know, you look at some of these graphics. I mean, he started playing when he was 12 years old. So I think there's still upside there. But he's athletically, he's a freak of nature. And his skills just keeps getting him better and better. So I think he's a can't-miss guy.
Pete, you wrote about him. I mean, you wrote about him on Yahoo Sports. Terrific piece on Aiden, his backstory. It's up on Yahoo Sports right now. You know, I remember one of the things reading your story was like, you know, 12, or how young was he against North Carolina, you know, in the, like, kind of came out of nowhere for a bit. Now has become the most dominant player in college
it's
basketball.
It's been a really interesting career arc for him, Chris. He got discovered around age 12 in the Bahamas, came over to San Diego, and essentially has been a product, which isn't always a good thing, of the very flawed American basketball system. Mm-hmm. There were sort of these shadow economies built around him. You know, he goes to a school that didn't even have a basketball team, and they start a team, and by the time his junior year came around, they're playing a foreign schedule. They have a foreign trip built around him. An AAU team, Under Armour, poured a bunch of money in. It really ended up being a terrible investment for Under Armour because he ended up breaking away. And it showed a little bit, you contrast him to Doncic, who goes up and, you know, he's making real money by the time he's 15. And obviously now in the way things are designed in the United States, he can't do that. So he's survived the American basketball system and is here tonight, basically despite his experience in it, not because of it. And I think he's a transcendent talent, like Hop said. The best quote I've gotten about him from an NBA scout is that he's an aircraft carrier. He's just a different type of human than we see.
And Wes, he seems like he blends the best of everything, right? He's got that physical presence on the inside, can step out a little bit and shoot from the outside. Is he, I mean, I know you don't love the top of the draft, but is he, you know, a star in the making?
Yeah, he's certainly the class of this draft. And it's going to be, it's an exciting time for the Suns with, you know, having gone through this rebuild to get the number one pick. You know, he's obviously played at Arizona. There's a great tie-in with that organization. And because he can shoot and play away from the basket, he certainly can fit in the modern NBA. But it's just so unique when you watch the NBA Finals or the NBA Playoffs and the league is more random, it's more athletic, it's faster and smaller than we've ever seen it. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see. Another interesting theme in this draft is just the number of bigs that we have with the style of play kind of in the modern NBA. But there's without question, Ayton is the class of the draft. And, you know, it'll be interesting to watch his transition.
All right, one thing that we also know is that after that first pick, there's a lot of fluidity right now. I think you can probably lump the guys that are going to go 2 through 8 into one sort of box, but you don't know where they're going to go. I mean, guy that go 2 could also go 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. At that number 2 spot, you know, for everything I'm hearing, and I know Sacramento is sending out some smoke screens about not being high on Luka Doncic. I've been hearing the reverse. I've been hearing that Sacramento is high on Doncic. And right now, as we speak here on Wednesday night, he's the leader in the clubhouse. That's just what I've been hearing. So let's talk about Doncic and what he brings to the table, because he's the only guy over the last, you know, month and a half, 2 months that's been playing basketball. Like, he's been, as of a couple of days ago, he was, or a day ago, he was playing basketball. Wes, you were overseas recently.
Yeah.
Doncic, what is he projected to be? What kind of player is he?
So, you know, the NBA is, each GM and team has a profile. And you can learn to develop that profile. Like, Doncic kind of fits my sweet spot. For me, he'd be the second best player in this draft. Competitive, skilled, accomplished. You know, maybe he's a little under-athletic than some, you know, than the ideal NBA player. But you see guys like that make it all the time. So I think he is absolutely the next best guy and has established himself in doing so. But he may not go to 2. And then he may not go 3 to Atlanta, though there's been some rumor that, you know, Atlanta is kind of digging in deep on Doncic. It's just interesting because of really the athletic profile and the preference for length and athleticism that is oftentimes drafted at the very top.
We love comparables in this game. Like, I mean, I had one person told me on the negative side for Doncic, described him as kind of a souped up Hedo Turkoglu, is what he described him as, which I don't That's not somebody I want at number two. I don't want a souped-up Ader Turkoglu at number two. But do you see any kind of NBA comp with him?
You know, it's so hard because he's so big and handles so well. But the physical comp that has stood out to me recently was Wally Szczerbiak. Mm. Like, just big, strong, physical. And maybe you could argue that the NBA was different, you know, 10 years ago. But just that the skill and the ability to play with the ball, the ball in your hands. You know, Doncic has much better handle, much better feel. I like the Hidu comp a little bit. He's one of the most unique players we've seen who probably plays 2 through 4 and maybe 2 through 5 if teams shift down and go ultra small. That versatility is also a thing that is really valuable in this today's NBA.
So let me be skeptical here. I obviously haven't seen a ton of him. You just were over there scouting him, Wes. Is he an all-star or is he a starter? Like, I have no doubt, like, his accomplishments are going to translate to the NBA and he'll be a good player.
Yeah.
But if you're picking at two and you're a destitute franchise like Sacramento, you need an all-star. Is he an all-star?
I very well think he can be, yes.
Okay. Why?
Just the skill, the versatility. He can play pick and roll. He can shoot it. He competes his butt off. He's big. I mean, I think you can play him anywhere. One of the things that we have found is versatility has a great deal of value in today's game. You know, because part of it, like, you know, you'll hear it all the time that a player comes in and says, I want to play four. Well, we try to tell the player, well, that's 48 minutes at the four. If you can play the three, you know, it might be 96 minutes, and there's just more opportunity to get on the floor. And the more things you do, it's more of an opportunity for your coach to play you. So I just think he's going to find his way on the court. I think he's going to help his team win, and he's certainly won, you know, Eurobasket, the ACB, the EuroLeague. He's 19. This kid, I think, is really, really good, and I think the NBA is overthinking this one on hole.
It's kind of driven me crazy the last, you know, couple of weeks how Luka's been kind of picked apart a little bit. Because people are watching him play and are like, well, yeah, I saw him play, doesn't do that all well. Meanwhile, over here, you've got guys going up against chairs and, you know, broom handles and, you know, you know, dumb stuff.
Like folding chairs, like, why, like, it's like
garbage cans, it's like, cones.
It's like, boy, that, you know, Trae Young, and I'm just using Trae as an example, like, boy, that Trae Young had a great workout against a chair. Meanwhile, like, Doncic is playing highest level, that's highest level European basketball, right? And he's putting up numbers in that.
Yeah, I mean, against like elite Division I players that might be right outside the NBA, or guys that would come over and play in the NBA or have played in the NBA, and he's playing again, and he's the best player on the court. Mm. You know, I the NBA loves length and athleticism, and for good reason, right? We all know the best players have great length, great athleticism, but the players that have great length and great athleticism, in the absence of great IQ, skill, and competitiveness, don't make it. On the flip side, oftentimes you see great players with make it who are skilled, intelligent, and competitive who lack maybe the elite athleticism or the elite length. So this is just one of those things, right? Some guys love, you know, the deal. I mean, Hop, what do you think?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, you see, he produces. He's playing with pros.
Yeah.
And he's getting the numbers at the highest level right underneath the NBA. And I think anytime a guy produces, it goes back to Moneyball. You know, it goes back to, are you going to get stuck with the sexy look, or are you going to go with guy who produces? And I think he produces. There are questions. And I think there are certain teams, you know, it goes back to certain guys can be effective in a culture and a system of play.
Yeah.
You know, does he go to the team that fits his IQ, his skill set, maybe not as athletic, but maybe more movement? Mm-hmm. You look at the Golden State Warriors, it's more motion and movement. And obviously at the end when they don't have it, here's Steph, go do your thing. But I think that's important.
Yeah.
I want to get to some of the questions here. If you have questions on Facebook, fire away. Leave them on the link that we tweeted out that's out there. But before we get to that, one of the mystery men, Mike, is Michael Porter Jr., who has unbelievable talent, but a lot of question marks. Only played a handful of games last year in college. Injury issues even now as he goes through the pre-draft process. That's a guy you're very familiar with.
Yeah.
What do you make of him?
Well, I think he's arguable. I mean, he could go number one. He's got that type of talent. Obviously, he shoots it. He, you know, can post. He's athletic. He defends. He competes. Unbelievable character. Great family. All those check, 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 check. I think the question is why he doesn't make it. I think it goes back to having this injury is the first time he's ever had adversity in his life. He was homeschooled, you know, socially. You know, he's saying a lot of stuff in the media. You know, a lot of great players, they don't say those types of things, but he's almost talking himself into everything is going to be okay. I think this is the first time he's got knocked down. I mean, the one thing I love about him is the fact that, I mean, he wasn't 100%. He still tried to play in the NCAA tournament to help his team. So I know all those intangibles
are
there.
Is that a good thing for him, though? Like,
well, I, you know what? At the end of the day, you know, you get to go, in his case, to college once. Mm-hmm. So what a great opportunity. Try to win something. You know, you dream of playing the NCAA tournament, winning a national championship, and one day going to the NBA. So that could have been part of his dream. But I think on the flip side, you know, the injury, you know, how does that handle, you know, when a heavyweight champion gets, a champion in boxing gets hit to the ground, how do you bounce back? Mm-hmm. Psychologically, are you there? You know, hearing some of the comments that he's making about, I'm like Kevin Durant, but I play better with contact.
Giannis, the Giannis comp out there. Know, like, he's taking the best of everybody.
But I look at guys like Jason Tatum, and I look at guys who can produce right away. He can shoot. He's a, you know, he's you know, they put him at the four. I mean, he's a wing. I mean, he can handle the ball. He's very skilled. And most importantly, he can shoot. Mm-hmm. And at 6'11", that's obviously a will be a tremendous asset for any team.
He can torch those chairs or garbage cans.
Kill the chair, whatever.
He'll jump over them.
He's been great in workouts. June 8th, he was in Chicago. And NBA teams really needed to see him, Chris. They needed to see him live, and they needed to see him shoot, and they needed to see if his back was okay. He put on a show in that workout, which I think was really important for him, just for his credibility in the league in this part of the draft. I am a believer in Michael Porter Jr. I think he's a taller version of Tatum, like Hop said, and I really think if he stays healthy, and again, we'll leave that to the medical experts. I have no idea what his x-rays look like, but I think if he stays healthy, he becomes one of the better, if not the best player in this draft.
Wes, he's obviously talented, has the talent that's comparable from what people have told me to DeAndre Ayton. If he was fully healthy, he didn't have the stuff from last year. But how big a risk is he with these injury issues? I mean, is he a high-risk player this high on the draft?
Yeah, you know, without looking at the MRIs and talking to the doctors, it's hard to get a sense. But talking to a number of people around the league, I think we have somewhat of a sense. And the risk of the injury is relative to the draft position, right? The lower down the board, the easier it is to take the risk. And there's a great line with Philly, I think, when they took Embiid. I think Sam Hinkie's line was like, I thought it was more of a risk to pass on Embiid than it was to take Embiid. So we could very well see a scenario like that with Michael Porter. And it's also worth mentioning that Mark Bartlestein, the agent for Michael Porter, has handled this process with great class and providing the medical, not trying to hide anything or just give it to a couple teams. And that has to bode well for Michael Porter in this position. But he could slide. I don't think he slides that far. I mean, I remember McDonald's a couple years ago, McDonald's All-American game. I mean, you walk out of the gym and you're clearly like he's one of the best players, if not the best player in this class. So it's certainly a risk. The medical is always a concern, especially when you deal with a back. You know, back, knees, hips, feet, those are really the most concerning areas. But if he's not going to slide that far just because the risk is going to outweigh.
It's too talented.
The reward's going to outweigh the risk.
Well, it would seem to me that, like, I mean, because of that talent, even if this year winds up being kind of a redshirt year, if he's a little bit banged up, if it takes him the whole year to get back into the kind of shape you need to be into an NBA, player, I agree with that Henke. What he said there is smart, because look at years later.
Yeah.
I mean, you're ecstatic to have Joel Embiid. Yeah. If it takes Michael Porter 2 years to become the player that he's going to be, I mean, don't you jump? You look at the teams in the top five there. If you're a team like Memphis, if he's there, should you not have any sense of, you're not winning anything, do you not have any sense of urgency, like, to take these guys and wait it out?
You know, I think you go, Chris, and from talking to teams that have dug in on Porter, he's expected by training camp to be 100%. Now, when he worked out the other day in Chicago,
conditioning is going to be a factor all year long.
He is not there yet conditioning-wise to have that high-end athleticism that Mike was mentioning earlier. But by the start of training camp, they expect 100% Michael Porter. I thought it was stupid for him to come back in the SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament. I know it's your school and it's all that stuff. It was just a huge risk for his career. And I was at the game in Nashville that he played in the NCAA tournament. He was awful. Like, I just felt bad for him running around there. He didn't belong to be on the court.
That's the only tape that you have now. You look at it like, well, is that
you can say it was valor and school and he grew up a Missouri guy. I felt bad for him out there. I was just like, what are you doing?
The NBA knows, though. They're going to discount those games heavily. And, you know, this goes back to, like, 2011, I think, was the last time we probably saw something like this with a player this high, with Kyrie Irving coming back in the NCAA tournament playing out west after not only playing whatever it was 10 games earlier in the year
we were in Atlanta at the time. Chris Grant, our general manager, flew out there. It was a big decision on the foot. We draft Kyrie number one. It certainly panned out to be a great pick for the Cavs. So, you know, this can certainly go Michael Porter's way. And, you know, I'm with Pop, like trying to play.
It shows a lot about the kid. I mean, listen, he's going to be worth $100 million, whatever it may be. He's going to sign for that one day. That's the class that he's in, and he wants to go out there and try to play. Mm. Most guys are going to do what? bring in the left-hander, you know what I mean? Like, they don't want, you know, and so it shows a lot about his character. Mm. And, you know, being around his mom and dad, meeting them, I don't know him well, but being around the family, high-character kid, comes from a great family. You know, it's a basketball family. So, you know, I think the kid's going to be terrific.
All right, we're going to get to your questions on Facebook. A reminder, our draft show Thursday, 7 o'clock Eastern time, Yahoo Sports, the Yahoo Sports mobile app. The four of us will be here on set. Sham Sharania and Kristen Peek will be out at the Barclays Center to bring you all the interviews and as much information as we can provide at that time. But keep it at the top of the draft, Wes. You've got Atlanta sitting there, and in full disclosure, that's all Wes's fault. Like, that's, you know, like what happened there was all his fault.
Is the first one, we've got one. Is that, we chart these. We have a GA.
Hey, put the Chris Rannon.
Tote board.
Somewhere Bobby Marks just got a shudder. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm feeling like it's almost reflexive that I got to have somebody that I can say, I'm glad Wes is here.
So that's why.
Are they in, I mean, they got multiple first-round draft picks. Yeah. Sitting there at the third. Are they in a good spot there, drafting three? What do you think the Hawks are looking at right now?
You know, I think it's very fluid there. You know, the big question with where Atlanta is, or any team in a rebuild, is really two questions. How long are you going to be in the rebuild, and where do you come out on the upward trajectory of the rebuild? Those are the two big questions. Mm. And, you know, large market, nobody wants to be in a rebuild for a long time. But just knowing Travis Schlink, the general manager there, we've been friends for a long, long time. His profile of player is tall, is long, athletic. I mean, he fits the Michael Porter profile. So it'll be really interesting to see what Atlanta does, because they could be fluid in the draft and they could move around and just kind of go into asset collection mode. The other thing that's really important that we haven't touched on yet, but is the financial tightening in the NBA. You know, we're going to look at the most kind of scarce cap space scenario we have seen. There's about 10 teams in the league that project to have double-digit cap room come July 1st. But you're also looking at potentially double-digit 10 potential tax teams. And so you're going to see a lot of financial trades. So you could even, and Atlanta's one of those teams that actually may take on contracts for incentive. So you could see flip back, you could see move up. Like, I think Atlanta's going to be very active in this draft and going to come away with a couple pretty good players and, I would bet, a couple future assets.
So they should thank you at this point for...
I would say I like what they're doing.
Yes. We got a few questions on the Grizzlies here about what they could do. I think people are reading a lot of reports out there about the Grizzlies shopping that pick. I don't know what they're going to do in that spot. I would think it would be a massive mistake, even if you disagree with the strength of this draft. If you're the Memphis Grizzlies and you badly need an infusion of young talent, I don't care how much Chandler Parsons makes. I don't care how bad that contract is. You've got to trust your scouts and draft a guy that can play. I mean, Michael, I'll ask you, like, sitting there at the number four spot, is there, as we like kind of project out, I mean, do you like that spot? Is there a guy there that you would like from Memphis?
Well, depending on what your needs are. I mean, Mark, you
everywhere.
Got, I mean, but I'm just saying, there's a lot of talent. I mean, this goes back to, you could end up getting with Michael Porter. You could get Luka Doncic. You're getting I think you got to go with the best potential star. I mean, that's how you get these stars in the draft. And I think, I think you have a couple of those assets, but you got to be able to take the best player in that position. I think there's a few of those guys that are high-level talents.
Well, let me ask you, Wes. Mo Bamba's sitting there in kind of that range, and he's not working out for Memphis. He's not, talking to them at all about or sharing medicals or that stuff. Does that disqualify him? If you're running the Grizzlies, does that disqualify Mo Bamba from being drafted by you?
Not if you believe that he's going to be the best player that you can pick at that spot. You take him. And, you know, you talk to your friends, like, around the league. Someone's going to help you give you some indication. He just played, you know, a full year at Texas, you're going to have talked to that staff as well. But going to the Memphis situation, there are two huge points to this situation. One, they're down a first-round pick and starting in 2019. And two, they have Marc Gasol as an unrestricted free agent a year from now. And they're in a very tight, to add to that, I guess, they're in a very tight financial situation this offseason. So you hit it right on the head. Like, the talk about Chandler Parsons and four to create flexibility, I just don't see that. And if they do that, I'd be surprised, because they have to be thinking about how they add to this roster into the future when they're down a pick and Marc Gasol may leave in a year if they're not able to get an extension done or re-sign him. Because 2019 is lining up to be an incredible free agent class, with Marc Gasol being one of the headliners. So it's a really interesting time for the Grizzlies that I could not believe that they would entertain Parsons and four to spend the money elsewhere.
Well, I think they should have moved on from Gasol a year ago, just because, you know, get what you can for a guy that still has value, that can still play, even if it's 60 cents on the dollar, you're at least moving forward. You're not going to win, you know, when Marc Gasol is still playing at a high level. That is not a popular opinion in the Memphis front office. I've had that conversation, but yeah, that's where I stand on that. But let me, you know, keeping with Mo Bamba there, I'm every time I watch film of this guy, I love what I see there. He looks like a two-way player. He can do things you don't see from a lot of big men. I mean, Pete, what kind of player? Maybe I'm a little bit biased from watching the KG thing he did with him recently. But like, he just, there's something about his game that
so
I really.
You watch film. You watch the KG.
I do.
Special.
I watch the KG thing. Yeah. Yes. We're on Facebook, so I want to give Facebook a plug there.
Yeah. No. Very good. You start with Mo Bamba, 7'10" wingspan, just like a truly unique body type. And on offensive game, Chris, that still has a long way to go up. Like, he can shoot, and it is a reasonably polished shooter, but I feel like he can be a lot better, and he can really stretch. The problem is he's still raw on that offensive end right now, so there's some risk-reward there. Do you think he develops it and can go and become sort of the archetype of the modern five? Or is there an offensive plateau there, and he's a rim protector defensive guy? I think that's what you and your scouting staff at this point, if you're Memphis or wherever he ends up, have to evaluate, is where is his offensive ceiling? How much can he grow? Character-wise, he is off the charts. They're like highest end. You know, there's been some questions, like it's this like classic NFL draft comment thing. He has other interests. Oh my God, he has other interests.
Yeah.
Is that a bad thing or is that a good thing? So there's been some criticism of that. You know, in talking to the Texas staff and being around that team a little bit this year, I was around him in the NCAA tournament. Boy, I mean, it is. They love Bamba. They love him. And I feel like I am optimistic about his offensive upside sitting here right now.
See, and I disagree. I think sometimes, like, you're born to be something. You know, it's like a guy who can't shoot, and you kind of make him a shooter, and he's kind of like this engineered shooter. But I do think the one thing he is, he's an amazing defensive player. I mean, his length, you know, but offensively, he'll be Clint Capella. You know, you're going, you're throwing lobs, and he's dunking. I don't think you're going to see him, a guy who's like eight and getting the ball in the post, or, you know, mid-post, or you're going to. But, you know, defensively, if you want to build your franchise on a defensive player rather than getting a guy like, say, a Michael Porter, and he's available, who could be a, you know, a 20-point-per-game scorer as well, you know, I'm an offensive guy in that regard. I think those are very hard to find, and, you know, my opinion.
But specific to Memphis on Bamba, you know, the recent history of an organization, it works its way into the thinking of a front office. And Hasheem Thabeet, being drafted high and missing, I would be hard pressed to think that they're not making that correlation and understanding that risk, because that will be the narrative if Bamba didn't make it. And so you can't get away from recent history.
Do you think, like, correct me if I'm wrong, it felt like Thabeet at that time was a pretty big risk. I mean, he was a great defensive player. I don't remember it being like this. Was it a consensus at that time on Thabeet that he was like number two and should have been? No. I mean, like, I guess the question is, like, do you look at Thabeet and Bamba being comparable risks in that top four or five range?
I think it's a fair assessment. Okay. Yeah. Like, you know, one of the great things about the draft is everybody picks their guy. Everyone thinks their guy is going to be really, really good. Mm-hmm. You know, no one picks their guy thinking he's not going to work. You know, we take a step back and we're like, oh, what were they thinking? So yeah, like, I think it's, you know, there were a number of teams that liked Hasheem Thabeet a lot. There's rumors over teams take, you know, wishing he was there and ended up taking MVPs. but you know, I think it's a comparable one. And maybe the bigger question is just the fit in the modern NBA. Mm-hmm. You know, the game is going skilled and fast, And so, you know, it's just a really interesting dynamic in this draft. In this free agent class, there's three bigs potentially that are, you know, traditional bigs, centers. There was a lot of bigs drafted last year when the league is getting, you know, more and more skilled. Mm-hmm.
Great to beat story. Prominent NBA agent who will remain nameless. That draft calls me up and he says, Pete, he's a Hall of Famer. I've never seen a big moving around like that. He's an NBA Hall of Famer. He may actually be a G League Hall of Famer. I don't know that. But
you know what? No. Can I get
he's
a
point? I was a D League GM.
He's not a Hall of Famer. No, but I'm going to tell you what. When we played against him, he dominated the game defensively. He did do that. I mean, he stayed in there. But it wasn't him up on pick and rolls. He kind of iced what teams do now, downed it, stayed in the paint. But he could block shots as good as anybody. I think the different thing with Bamba, and one thing I've seen about players, certain players play upright. They're very vertical. Bamba can get in a stance and use his length. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, he can move laterally. I think that's a big thing, especially when you're defending ball screen.
Mm-hmm. Great point.
I can't believe we're having a conversation about Haseem the beat right now. That
but it's a you great comparison.
It's a great call. But like, I think the last 5 minutes, if people in like Memphis and other places are listening to this, yes. Scared the Jesus out of them.
Support for this podcast, as always, comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Mannix, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Let me ask you guys about Trae Young, because Trae Young is like the first player to come out of the Steph Curry generation. He's the guy that grew up watching Steph Curry and ostensibly plays like Steph Curry. Now, I'm sure everybody would hope he would be Steph Curry that drafts him, but Pete, do you see that comp? I mean, how fair is the... And it's not fair. You're talking about a two-time MVP.
Unicorn. Yes. Steph Curry is a unicorn.
It's different.
So, wait a minute, though, to hop in. No one thought Steph Curry was a two-time MVP.
Third point guard drafted that year.
Yeah. So,
did you pass on him, too?
Probably.
Okay.
I don't remember.
Total recall.
Yeah. I mean, I even remember Steph Curry after his rookie year being with USA Basketball over in Turkey, sure. And he was your 11th man on that team, right? And he was like a standstill spot-up shooter. I think the Curry didn't come out of the womb like that. He's developed since he's gotten to the NBA quite a bit in terms of his handle and the stuff you see now. So it's a good reminder that, you know, Trae Young can still grow, but I just worry about he's so slight, and I worry about him defensively. I think he's underrated as a playmaker. I mean, name one of his teammates at Oklahoma.
I couldn't.
Of course. And he led the nation in assists. Now, some of that was there was so much. They did the Jimmy Patsos, like they triple-teamed him every time. Yeah. And so Trae Young was able to move the ball around. And, I mean, incredible offensive production, great instincts. But just defensively, he's a, like, flash red button liability.
Yeah, well, get into that a little bit, Mike, and whatever you however you want to go there. But the defense... If you can't defend this level, you can't play. Like, and if you know Steph is a reasonable enough defender, he's fine. But you know, I know that during some of these individual workouts, Trae Young was showcasing defense. And correct me if I'm wrong, Wes. You don't often see guys showcase defense in workouts, right?
How do you do that 1-on-0?
Like, no, but I mean, I think he's going up against
the cone.
Against
a moving cone. It's
some of these pro days.
Garbage can. It's coming at me. I gotta slide.
Here comes Rob McClanahan running at you. Right there. I go with a crossover. But, I mean, defensively, what do you think?
Well, you know what? Listen, there's always going to be... I think his strengths outweigh his weaknesses. And I'm going to tell you what. He's a master of the pick and roll. The NBA is pick and roll. Okay, he can shoot behind it, he can create there, his range is ridiculous. And I think the only way he doesn't become successful is he goes to a system that doesn't allow him to play with the freedom and the confidence of what he does. Like, I believe, like, if you put him with Golden State right now and they play their free system with IQ and movement and skill, I think he's a great player. If he goes to a team that doesn't have other IQ players with him, But I think a team that's looking for the future or looking to create a culture, change a system of how they want to play, he's a heck of a player, high talent. And every game that I saw him, again, AAU, high school, whatever I did, he was the best player on the floor. Mm-hmm. Every time I saw him, he was the best player on the floor. But that was also the way that I saw Tyus Jones. Mm-hmm. So I think there's, could he be Steph or is he going to be Tyus Jones, which are good players in the NBA. I just don't know if he can be Steph.
You know, this is like the great debate, right? Can the guy guard? I was having this conversation with an NBA executive recently, and we were talking about Steve Nash. Steve Nash, I don't know if he ever, quote, guarded the way you kind of typically thought of, like, sitting down and taking the charge. He was one of the toughest, nastiest, great hands, steel defender, but he might not have been the most physical, get up in you and turn you for 94 feet. So in evaluating it's really hard to evaluate defense, especially in the Syracuse zone.
Not that I'm talking Washington about anybody. Zone.
Oh, come the on. Washington zone.
Come
sorry.
On, our but defense was awesome this year. Number one in the Pac-12.
It always is good. There's steals everywhere. Yeah. But in all seriousness, like you learn to just, what we've learned to do is just ask a couple questions. Is the guy willing? Is he willing to give the requisite effort? And then is he at that threshold of capable? And that's a sliding scale, right? And like if guys like Luke Rittenour and Steve Nash can go on to be very good, productive NBA players, now that's, you know, Nash being a, you know, multi-MVP and Rittenour being like a good NBA starter, is Trae Young going to be in that range? Without a doubt, it would be if he has the, you know, the guts to do it.
Do you think he has that, what he's talking about, that, you know, the...
It's hard to question his chest, as Les Miles would call it, his heartbeat. You know, clearly he played with great effort, and I don't think Lon Kruger wisely wanted to waste his energy on defense because he gave him so much on the other end. So I do think he becomes an adequate...
Which is like an NBA sort of, you know, mindset. Like, how many guys in the league from Harden to LeBron spend all their energy on offense and for most of the game don't expend much on defense?
Yeah. No, I think... But I do think if you're in a rebuilding situation, you're trying to create a culture, there could be some clashes there, right? Because you need this guy to buy in, you need this guy to guard, and he's not ready yet. And he's just tiny, he's thin, like his body, I can't see him ever becoming like a burly, like, you think like Holiday, like with bowling ball arms and that kind of stuff. I just can't see him growing into that physically.
Mm. All right, we're taking your questions on Facebook. A reminder, our draft show is Thursday night, 7 o'clock Eastern time. The four of us will be on set. Shams Charania, Kristen Peek over at the Barclays Center with news and with interviews coming here during the whole draft process. All right, everybody is looking for that next Donovan Mitchell, right? The 13th overall pick in the draft, turned into a big-time star in his first year, projects to be an even bigger star down the line. As you guys, I'll ask all three of the same question. As you look at the middle of the first round, guys most likely to be drafted in that spot, who stands out? Who do you like the most? Wes, we'll start with you.
You know, it might be a little further back than kind of that mid-first area, and it might not be the level of Donovan Mitchell because, I mean, he might be a top five guy in the future. He's incredible. But I'm a big, big fan of Grayson Allen. I have been for a long time. I think when the game is simpler for him, he gets to stand on the side and make shots. Great competitor, great athlete, incredible numbers in Chicago on the athletic testing stuff. I think this kid could be, you know, a very nice player. You know, we had Kyle Korver, who was a second-round pick and ended up being an NBA All-Star because we had an incredible run, and he just had an incredible season. Like, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility for a guy like Grayson.
Mike, before you give us yours, what do you think of Grayson Allen?
Boy, he's an ultra competitor. That guy he wants to win more than anything, and he can shoot it. He shoots with ease. He shoots with range. Duke's whole season changed when he started handling the ball more at the point guard. So his ability, like what Wes was saying, I mean, Donovan Mitchell played the two at Louisville. He wasn't the point guard. Mm-hmm. The question will be, can he do that? I think he can. I think his competitive nature. I think his skill level's high. And, you know, if he left as a freshman, he would have been a lottery pick then. Yeah, no. Stayed in college. I think he's a no-brainer. I think he's going to be a very good college or NBA player.
And, Pete, I don't get the sense that the tripping incidents bother too many teams. I mean, I think teams look at that as, look, he's really competitive. Like, he's trying to win. Like, it's something you've got to check when you get to the pros. And I do wonder inside a locker room how that goes over, like those kind of antics go over with your own teammates, like if that Bush League stuff. But what's your sense on Allen?
I talked to Jeff Capel today, Chris, who's the head coach at Pitt, who had him for 4 years at Duke, and Capel said something interesting. He was like, the NBA guys, they kind of love that. Now, obviously, he has to rein it in a little bit, but they see it as a sign of competitiveness. They see Grayson Allen as having the edge you need on, you know, playing back-to-back or three games in four nights, West Coast trip. They want someone. Now, he has to harness it, but they want someone who has that. He said a majority of the NBA guys saw that as a positive with Grayson Allen.
Wes, is the question on him that is he his position? Is it can he shoot the NBA? Like, because he's a good shooter, and so what I think I've been hearing during some of these workouts, he's been shooting it pretty well.
Yeah.
What are the why is he not higher up in that? Not to compare to Redick, the white guy from Duke comparison, but why is he not in that lottery range?
I think kind of Hop mentions it, like he doesn't come out after his freshman year, mm-hmm. and there was inconsistency in production. That's fair. You know, he would go a month and not shoot it well or not play great for a month, and then he would have great stretches. Mm-hmm. So I think it was just about consistency, and then he's a four-year guy, which he gets overvaluated. And then the point to the competitiveness thing, I think he's one of these guys like Matthew Dellavedova and Draymond Green. You love them when you're on your team, and you hate them when they're on the other team. Mm-hmm. And certainly he's going to have to, you know, rein it in a little bit, but I think you're right on, Pete, like NBA people, NBA players, NBA fans, they're going to believe and they're going to want to get behind a guy like Grayson Allen.
See, I disagree that he's going to have the ball in the NBA. I think he's better as a wing, and he's an athlete running, you know, on the break and then spotting up and hitting wing threes. I think that's going to be his game. I know Duke did thrive with him with the ball, but I don't see him playing a lot of one in the NBA.
Mm-hmm. He's super athletic, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you one thing. If there was a good piece of cake in the refrigerator my brother was going after and he was in front of me, guess what I was doing? I was tripping him. So at the end of the day, the bottom line is I'm getting that cake. And that just shows you, I mean, he's a competitor. That kid is a competitor. And I agree with Wes. I mean, the bottom line, you want him on your team.
All right, go ahead, Pete. Go ahead.
I was going to say, when you played him at Syracuse, there's 3 years you probably schemed for him and such. Was he a guy you hated playing?
Well, yeah, you hated, but he was a dagger guy. He had an array of shots. He has deep range. He shoots it easy. Like, I always look at, like, the NBA three-point shot. Who shoots it easy? Like, he shoots it, you know, like, you'll see some clips in tomorrow night's show when you guys are watching, but he literally gets it. But he's like, it's beyond the line. You know, he shoots like a set shot, but it's quick. And he also is a great finisher, big-time athlete. People don't know that. With that, when you can shoot it, it makes you bigger, faster, stronger. And his ability to finish at the rim,
that's right.
I think he's going to be
great.
Didn't
he win the dunk contest at McDonald's?
Yes.
All-American, like, 5 years ago? Yeah. And I remember 2 years ago in 2016, we're at the Garden at the very beginning of the season, and Grayson has, like, 35 in front of the whole NBA, and everyone thinks he's going to be a lottery pick.
Yeah.
Like, he has shown great peaks. Yeah. He's going to be really interesting to watch
throughout
the process.
Does his age really work against him in a draft like this, like being a four-year guy? Because not saying you did it as a GM, but like a lot of GMs that I know, I think they view like these freshmen, these underclassmen, as almost an easy way to keep their job even longer. Because, you know, if you draft an 18-year-old or 19-year-old, you can tell your owner, like, it's going to take them a few years to develop, you know, give it time. Whereas if you draft a senior, you know, if he doesn't turn out like year one, year two, it's like, well, he's not going to be able to play.
Yeah, so the NBA career arc is pre-prime of, you know, 18 to 23, mm-hmm. prime 23 to 30, and 30 and beyond post-prime. LeBron has changed that. I don't know where post-prime is for LeBron.
52,
yeah, this guy's amazing.
His son might retire.
Yeah, like $1 million in a strength coach every day, right? Yeah. I'm investing in myself.
That's but, no, it certainly is the great debate. What you often find is the one and done guys are the best players on average, right? Because they're clearly the guys that come right away. But then oftentimes seniors are the most under-evaluated and they go later. And specifically like hit rate, you know, everyone does these studies differently in the draft, but hit rate in the second round for us seniors were far better than any other age group. And so like if Grayson were to slip, let's say like in the second round, he's a steal, you know, up higher, you know, in the mid lottery or whatever. You know, you could easily have the age debate.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a great there's a thing that is always discussed in draft rooms. It's what he can be versus what he will be, mm-hmm. right? And can be is like the easiest thing in the world. Unfortunately, you're not paid for can be. You're paid for what they will be and making that call. And the gap between 19 and 22, of the productivity gap between a 19-year-old who might not have produced and
And a guy like Grayson, who has done it for 4 years, albeit somewhat inconsistently, and there's, you know, things that are fair to criticize.
He's an easy pick, Chris, for the early 20s, because you're an established team at that point. You're a playoff team, and you have specific holes to fill. And, like, Canby is very easy to project, so I don't think he gets out of the first round. I think he ends up going before 25, because some team like Minnesota in the early 20s says, okay, we want an edge, we want age, and we want someone who can help us right away.
Yeah, to your point, Wes, about the financials, if you can get cheap help end of the first round, second round, that can play. Like, they can play right away.
For sure.
I mean, you look at NBA teams now, like, the bottom quarter of their roster is all, like, you know, minimum guys and cheaper guys. They're always on the lookout for those first or second round picks that can play right away. I mean, he could be invaluable. If it turns out he can play, he could be invaluable to one of those teams.
No doubt about it. Yeah.
I think we're seeing a little bit of the Malcolm Brogdon effect in the NBA. I think Malcolm Brogdon didn't get drafted because too many people wanted the 19-year-old to project. They wanted the lottery ticket that's going to hit long-term. Well, Malcolm Brogdon came in and was Rookie of the Year, and he's going to be a great NBA player for a long time and really help launch that Bucks franchise forward. So I think there's 8 or 10 veteran college guys, in Allen's obviously one of them, that are going to go maybe 15 to 35. I think of Keita Bates-Jop from Ohio State, 6'7 guy, Big Ten Player of the Year. I mean, best player in the Big Ten, right? Like, and has the length and some of the athleticism, can switch and do all the things defensively in the modern NBA. I think guys like that, teams are going to take a pause and look at and say, okay, you know, can he help us right away? And there's a lot of guys who I think physically can.
Did you have to mention Ohio State guy? You had to. It was like an obligatory Ohio State.
He's a slot receiver. Return punts.
Hello, wide receivers coach out there. there we go. We got off topic there a little bit, talking about Grayson. But, Mike, the middle of that first round, guys that could that impress you that could be there, who are you looking at?
The guy who I love is Lonnie Walker. Mm-hmm. And I love Lonnie. He almost has the physical comparisons of Donovan Mitchell. You know, again, I don't know too much of – you know, what Donovan Mitchell has on the inside, how he's been built. But I tell you one thing, size, skill for position, athletically, Lonnie Walker is a load. I can tell you, he can get wherever he wants to get on the court. He's got great size. Obviously, he needs to improve his shot. But I had recruited him out of high school, and he just dominated. And I was, you know, I was really impressed with how he played this year. They didn't have a veteran team. They had a lot of young guys. And when he was right, he was as good as anybody in the country.
Let me ask Wes on this. Are there lessons that can be learned from a Donovan Mitchell? Like, one thing that's helped him greatly is the spacing in the NBA. And he and I talked about this a couple of times, just like how much room you have to operate there versus what he had in college. Is that something as an executive you look at, you say, all right, here's how this guy plays. If you expand the floor and play the NBA style, he's going to be a lot better? Because that was a big part of Mitchell's development.
Yeah, so the hardest part, one of the hardest parts of the evaluation process is the kind of situational analysis. What's the system he's playing in college? What position is he playing in college?
How
is
zone defense, man.
And that zone defense, man, is brutal. It's a great question, and it's a really hard answer. Mm-hmm. Because I'm telling you, it's one of the hardest things to figure out. I mean, we were there at the ACC tournament in Brooklyn, where Donovan Mitchell is like just kind of another guy out there.
Yes.
And now he's like an amazing prospect. You know, we had a young scout, Dotun Akinwale Jr., who I got to give incredible, I get the chills telling the story, because Dotun, you know, we had a thing where, you know, you can always come in and it's your job to make sure that the guy ahead of you knows. And Dotun walked into my office and literally walked me out of the building to my car twice, saying, you got to watch Donovan Mitchell. You got to watch Donovan Mitchell. You got to watch Donovan Mitchell. This kid is great. And, you know, you go to the ACC tournament and he has 8 points and you're like, Dotun, like, what's going on, man? Like,
happens to a head coach, too. This guy's really good. He had 4 points. How good can he be?
So, you know, it's a great story. It's a hard comp. You know, the space in the NBA, certainly it can help a player, but it's really, like, I didn't see that at a Donovan.
But would you say, Wes, it goes back to, like, Russell Westbrook? He averaged 9 points a game at UCLA.
It's a great
he can
guy.
Really defend. He was really athletic. But the bottom line is he can get athletically. I mean, Donovan Mitchell had a putback dunk at Syracuse that was, like, and you just saw, like, that's not normal. Mm-hmm. And then you look, I think you got to look at the character of the kid. Yeah. At the end of the day, how are they built? Do they love the game? Are they working on their game the whole time?
Oh,
and
no.
Those are the things that you don't know unless you know what he does is they dig deep to the point of you know, FBI, right?
I mean, and that's where the draft process, that's the distinguishing.
You just said FBI in front of Pete. You're not like,
well, oh. I'm just saying. He jumped. But the point is, like, listen, they're making a huge investment.
Got a wire on.
At the end of the day, right? I mean, you're
yeah, so you know, what defines kind of outperformers is probably universal across industry, right? You got to have a passion for it, what you do. You got to be an incredible worker, and you know, and clearly Donovan Mitchell has those great things. And going back to Lonnie Walker, he has certainly helped himself through these interviews and through this pre-draft process. And as a guy that was probably thought of as like what, Pete, late first round guy, mm-hmm. you know, sure. who's testing the waters yeah. to now, he sounds like he's firmly in the back half of the lottery.
So here's a topic, Chris, that I think is interesting, and I'd like to hear from Hop's perspective and West's perspective, and it ties right into Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell, you recruited him, Hop. He's a pretty good player, right? Yeah, top 30 guy, but he wasn't one of these like AAU prodigies. He didn't have a posse. They weren't like being like, come get your own sneaker and that kind of thing. And my guy who I think is the next Donovan Mitchell is Zaire Smith from Texas Tech. He's a guy with a 42-inch vertical. Chris Beard, his coach, told me today he's going to be a top 1% NBA athlete. Yeah. All right. So if you look at some traits, like what are some traits? Russell Westbrook traits, like guys who may not have had awesome college careers, but Zaire Smith was not a top 100 guy. He had like no AAU rep. He did not have any BCS offers until his senior year, late fall, when he played in the Whataburger tournament. I wanted to sneak Whataburger in. Since we don't have any sponsors, I'm going to try to court some, right? But I really feel like there's still some bias against Zaire Smith, because if he had been properly evaluated in AAU and properly on the lists, he would be in the conversation more than higher. Now, he shot 40% from three. He didn't take a ton of attempts. And now his offensive game isn't that polished. There's some position questions. He's not perfect. But I feel like when you're looking at like vast upsides, Zaire Smith is one of those guys mid-first round who can really rock it and be all NBA rookie team and kind of go from there. But I guess, Wes, I'm going to ask you this. Like, do you think there's in scouting and in draft from biases from guys who've been ranked since they were sophomores and you know about them and you watched them in McDonald's practices?
100%. You ranking bias is one of the most challenging things to overcome in the draft room. Consensus bias is really challenging to navigate. But you mentioned something that really... What I hear when you say that is resilience and perseverance. Yeah, resilience. And we drafted a guy, Taurean Prince, 12. I think we got beat up a little bit on the pick in terms of a reach early, but he didn't even start until his senior year at Baylor. He was another guy that had no offers. And there's a ton of stories. I mean, Steve Nash, right? No offers. Like, and so these guys, I actually think this is a great indicator of potential success when you have a guy come out of nowhere and rise the way, you know, Zaire Smith and Donovan Mitchell have.
Yeah. Beard told me today he's a four-a-day guy because they would obviously do individual workouts and then they would practice. He would go in the morning by himself, like before breakfast, and shoot, and then he would shoot at 11 o'clock at night. So if you want to talk about indicators, like you said, across the board, across industry, Zaire Smith has shown a lot of those. That's just why I'm so bullish on him.
How wary, I mean, you guys talked about the interview process and these individual workouts. I always wonder how much impact they should have on this process, especially for guys that played either a full year or multiple years in college. You talked about guys interviewing real well a minute ago, Wes. Like, yeah. How impactful is that on the process?
The interview and the medical are very important. And getting time to build a relationship through Chicago or the interviews that happen typically at Chicago and then bringing them into, you know, your city, into your arena, your practice facility, and then going to dinner. You know, the actual on-court workout, be it 3-on-3 or 1-on-0, whatever it is you're able to negotiate with the agent, that is very misleading. And you see a lot of mistakes made in those draft workouts. Those draft workouts have value. They're not valueless, but it's a very small percentage of the process. Whereas the interview and the medical it's a huge mover.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask Wes, let me ask you a question. Like, when you go back and you have kids in, you never go 5-on-5, right? It's 1-on-1, 3-on-3 interviews. And I always was wondering why at the NBA draft or the combine they play 5-on-5. There's no practices. Like, how, like, when you go and evaluate, well, he played well, it's almost like an AAU game. I mean, you're not getting practices. I think it's also kind of a misleading evaluation. Would you agree, disagree?
In
how do you feel about that?
In the 3-on-3 or?
I'm saying more in the Chicago, the 5-on-5, you know, where they're going down back and forth, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's.
I was just curious.
It's interesting. Whenever you can see him play, you want to see him play. Mm-hmm. This is a great one. You know, the great thing about the part of the game that's played this time of year is the agent's like, oh, my guy's the best player. He's unbelievable. He's going to be an all-star, right? But and then you're like, okay, you're going to play in Chicago? He's like, no, he's not going to play in Chicago. Well, wait a minute. If he's the best player, why would he
he's
play?
He's an all-star.
He's just going to separate himself. And it's like, no, 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 there's too much risk. Yeah. So, you know, that's the game. You typically get, now we're, you know, they've brought 5-on-5 back in Chicago, which is really good to evaluate. And, you know, another player that I like a lot, we'll talk about, is, you know, who really helped himself in Chicago this year is Dante DiVincenzo.
Mm-hmm. Big ragu.
And
we're
so,
going with that?
Like,
we're going to roll with that.
I think that's okay. Mainstream at this point.
Okay, that's fair.
Ragu.
Whenever you can see him play, I think you want to see him play.
Well, let me ask you guys to finish here about two of the guys that seem to be rising a little bit. One is Jerome Robinson from my backyard, Boston College. Made me sad that he came into the draft. I was hoping for something productive from BC.
You're not donating enough money, Mannix.
I'm not donating any money. you know, Pete, why do you think he's rising as much as he is? Because now he's got a green room invite. He's in the mix, clearly, that lottery sort of range somewhere after that. What has he risen like he has?
Because he's very easy to project. He is a professional scorer. Mm. When you think about Jerome Robinson, he's a guy who's going to be able to come in and he is going to score. Jim Christian's offense is one of flow and pace, and he was such a great fit in it. And I think there's 3 years of evidence that, and also NBA teams like him. I talked to Christian this week about him. He's calloused a little bit. He's lost some. He's gone through some struggles. So there's a maturity there that you don't have with some of these younger prospects, maybe some one-year guys who are just kind of still have some AAU in their game and some selfishness. Like, I mean, you remember how many ACC games they lost his first two seasons?
Yeah. I was at many of them.
Yes. It was quite, they were quite distinct in the way they lost them. So I think in the eyes of the NBA, Jim Christian told me, Jerome Robinson gets a lot of credit for seeing it through and getting them to the NIT this year. And along the way, he played a ton of minutes and his game developed. And he's going to be able to come in and, like, you can see him in a reserve role come in and score the basketball right away.
Mike, you saw him a little bit.
Yeah, he's got great size. I was a little concerned early in the year. Who was the other guard that they have for North Carolina?
Ty Bowman,
yeah.
He started, like, taking over a lot of the shine last year. Like, after his freshman year, like, you got a potential ACC. This is a great player. Mm-hmm. Score, obviously, I agree with Pete. I mean, he can flat-out score. That's why he's there. But he can shoot, like, shoot, score. And he's got great size for his position. And, you know, I'm not as bullish as you are on him. But, you know, obviously a really good player.
Wes?
I mean, I'd echo it the same. Like, the premium on it goes back a little bit to, you know, Trae Young. Like, the premium on scoring and the ability to shoot the ball, that I would bet that you're going to see a lot of guys who can shoot, be it Grayson, be it, you know, Trae. You're going to see these guys get picked high because the game is just getting so skill-based.
How is it, just out of curiosity, when you see guys rise the way they have, and look, the NBA, you know, inviting a guy like Robinson into the green room, that clearly indicates they believe he's risen into that range. But is that just because, like, these early projections are wrong about a guy like Jerome Robinson, or is it something that he shows in these workouts that elevates him above the tape that you see on him during the year?
It's probably a combination of both. Mm-hmm. You know, the NBA kind of does a little bit of a kind of informal, you know, like, what would you call it? Just like a poll, mm-hmm. right, of who belongs. So certainly enough teams have said the name that he has established himself as that level guy. But it's also, you know, one of the things we learned is the late riser, you got to be careful. You got to be careful of the late riser.
Or beware.
Yeah. And then
Derek Williams.
Yeah. And you just, like, you hear those names and you start to dig in and then you try to figure out what it is. And sometimes it's an agent doing just a masterful job in navigating the process. So I love the shooting of this guy. But it's certainly a thing that you got to go back and say, hey, why didn't you like this guy in February? Why didn't you like this guy in, you know, November? Yeah. Why didn't you like this guy a year and a half ago? Mm-hmm. And that's important to do.
I'll answer those questions, Wes. He had two biases. One is ranking bias. He was unranked out of high school. He played in high school in North Carolina with Mark Gottfried's son, and Mark Gottfried did not recruit him to NC State. All right? So you want to talk about a sleeper. I mean, everyone in the Triangle area slept on this kid. So he comes in, nobody knows about him, has to make a name, and then there's losing bias. People, NBA teams, I would think, I've never been in a draft room, don't want players from losing teams.
Yeah.
Oh, Kevin Martin faced this forever, right, in the NBA. Kevin Martin was like, oh, man, he can't make the playoffs. Jamal Crawford, like, he didn't make the playoffs for, like, 11 years in a row, and it's like, man, Jamal Crawford can't play. All of a sudden, he's in the playoffs helping a team.
Those are great points. Mm-hmm.
The other name that's going up, and I'm going to let you say it because I'm going to butcher it. Kentucky's young guard, Shea.
Shea, not shy.
Shea.
Gilgeous Alexander.
Gilgeous Alexander. I got Gilgeous. The one wrong there.
He's Canadian.
You have, Mike, you have any thoughts on him? He seems to be someone that's gaining a lot of steam over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, we started recruiting him late because he was a guy that no one really kind of knew about. He originally committed to Florida. You know, he was a top 75 player, and he you know, just kept getting better and better. But, you know, talking to his coaches when we were recruiting him, he reminded them at the time of Michael Carter Williams. Had great size, played the point guard, blossoming. I mean, it goes back to when we had recruited Michael Carter Williams. He was 80th in the country. The end of the next year, he was playing in the McDonald's All-American game and coming to Syracuse. So I think, you know, his size, skill for position, and obviously I've heard he's a great worker. So a guy who's going to get in the gym, keep getting bigger. His, you know, it would be interesting to see how these guys handle physically, because he's really thin. You know, you talked about the Trae Young. Will he be able to handle the physicality? Obviously, it's not like old school NBA where they can put a forearm on you and you're getting bumped. It's more speed, space, quickness. But I think his potential's as good as anybody in the higher lottery in terms of what he could be.
I worry he hasn't done enough because he wasn't even great at the beginning of the year at Kentucky. He's not a great shooter. I don't know what an innate playmaker he is. Mm-hmm. So obviously he's a good player. I used the Carter Williams comparison yesterday because you see those long arms and you kind of think of Michael Carter Williams. I just wonder, with the jump he's going to have to take physically, the IQ jump he's going to have to take, if there could be a learning curve, especially if all of a sudden he sneaks in the top 10. Yeah. I think that's a little bit high for him. He's one of those late risers that may be rising too much, as Wes alluded to earlier.
Could be.
I mean, he fits the NBA profile, prototypical, long, great length, great build.
Everyone's looking for now.
Glenn. Yeah. And so that certainly, his physical profile and athletic profile is helping him. He's a good athlete, not a great athlete. I wonder if this isn't a shutdown, a promise. Mm-hmm. I don't believe he's had any workouts through this draft process. You know, I think his agent is a guy who has had a great deal of success with these kind of shutdowns. I don't know that. I just know when you hear a guy doesn't work out, that he might have a place that he feels really confident about going.
How aggravating is that for a general manager who is, you know, drafting in that range, that 8 to 15 range, whatever it may be, to not be able to get a guy? And other GMs I've talked to, it's driven them crazy in the past. I mean, there were guys like, you know, Mitch McGarry, like basically went the witness protection program for a while. Yeah. I remember Reggie Jackson, Brooklyn wanted
still
to.
Still in it, actually.
Yeah, he might still be. He might be back in it.
He reminds me of Reggie Jerome Robinson.
Yeah. Reggie Jackson was, you know, promised by, what, Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. I remember that the Nets wanted him to want to talk to him so bad. Billy King and the Nets almost drafted him anyway, just out of, like, spite. And he said, like, we're taking you anyway. But is it frustrating to... Nowadays, it seems like there's more promises now than in years before.
So a couple things. One, as a younger kind of guy, executive in the league, I probably didn't handle it as well as I could have. Mm. And really was like hammering to try to get a guy, you know, just got to work so hard to get him. Where, you know, you get away from it a little bit, and that's probably not the right approach at the end of the day. Just let it be. Watch the video. In many ways, it can help you because you're not influenced by, you know, the draft workout, the draft interview. You can get a really good sense doing the background that we talked about earlier at on campus, in high school, his AAU program. And so it certainly can be frustrating, but it shouldn't prevent you from drafting a player if you believe the player to be that good. And I will just say, we have done this multiple times and failed at getting the guy done. So it doesn't always work on the promise side of things.
Let me just finish this up, Wes, and ask you,
you know, what do you do when you promise? Do you, like, sign a paper? Do you pinky swear? Like, how's a promise executed?
Pinky promise.
Pinky promise.
Please screen grab. Please, God, somebody screen grab that. The pinky swear between Mike and Pete. The backdrop of all this draft, Wes, is Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
You know, rumored to be on the market, that we're not exactly sure where San Antonio stands on all this. Do you anticipate Kawhi being a factor in this draft? In other words, do you anticipate something involving Kawhi happening during this draft?
You know, there's going to be a ton of speculation. I don't think anyone knows, but those, you know, very few in San Antonio. And I would first say it's hard for us to bet against the Spurs and repairing a relationship with Coach Pop and
what, you know, RC has done and the culture they've built. And, you know, for all that Kawhi has been to that organization and just been a model citizen, you know, for everything prior to maybe this year, where all of a sudden there was a different narrative. So, number one, I wouldn't bet against the Spurs. But I also know the Spurs have done an amazing job in the draft, like all across the draft. And so if there's an opportunity for them and they have heard that I don't want to come back or I would like to leave where I'm going to leave, if that was communicated to them very directly and they believe that that's where it is, then there might be an opportunity at the draft. But I think we were talking earlier, you know, is there pressure? Is there a deadline? San Antonio is not going to be pressured into anything.
Yeah.
And if they end up trading Kawhi, they're going to make, you know, the best decision under they can under the circumstances for the organization. And I would, if I was another team trading for Kawhi that San Antonio was trading, I'd be scared. Mm-hmm. Just because I think the Spurs are going to win the deal.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a tough team to deal with. All right, guys, 7 o'clock Thursday night. We'll be right back here on set. Chris Mannix, Pete Thamel, Mike Hopkins, Wes Wilcox here at the Yahoo Studios. Shyam Sharani and Kristen Peek will be at the Barclays Center back in Brooklyn. We come on the air 7 Eastern. We'll have both rounds. It's going to be fun. We're going to go through this draft. So stick around. Lock in Yahoo Sports and the mobile app. Thanks for joining us here on Facebook Live. And, of course, if you missed any of this, you can check it out on the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast, which will be up on Thursday morning. So we'll see you all, hopefully, tomorrow night.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.